I'm Jamie. Welcome to Driver Picks, the podcast
where I pick the podcast
and I shut my kick hole.
And today we are discussing the 14th episode of season 6 of Supernatural, titled Mannequin 3: The Reckoning. Jamie, what did you think?
I don't know what I think, but I do know what I reckon.
Oh yeah, what do you reckon?
I reckon this episode was fucking batshit.
I reckon that this episode is what would come out if you asked AI to write an episode of Supernatural.
This episode was basically just like, if you can't think of your own plot, Doctor Who's is fine.
Literally, like, if you haven't seen this episode in a hot minute, basically the rundown is, a possessed mannequin is killing people, or various possessed mannequins are killing people, and the way that it is giving the first episode of the Doctor Who reboot from 2005 to the point where one of the main female characters is named Rose, and they also reference a Dr. Matt. Like, insane. The way they shoot the mannequins, particularly in one scene around the second victim's death, is giving Weeping Angels. It's ridiculous.
They just really were like, yeah, let's just do Doctor Who's plot.
Yeah, they were like, who's gonna notice? Super Hula? What's that?
Absolutely no audience overlap.
It's so funny to me. It just feels insane. Do you have somewhere you'd like to start other than plagiarism?
Let's start with our normal blanket big yikes.
Oh yeah, big yikes for this episode.
Big
this
last yikes. They much. Were really like, you know what? We're just gonna murder a girl and have the dickheads be the one that we have to save.
Not to defend it in any way, shape or form, but at least they have the fucking foresight to address this in the text dialogue. Sam and Dean at the end have that discussion about, like, what did we even achieve? Like, we saw an innocent woman die, didn't save her after her other innocent sister also died at the hands of these shitty dudes who we tried to save but ultimately failed to. Like, it's a shit situation all around, and at least they fucking acknowledge it instead of just skating over it like they normally would.
They do at least address it. Like, they do call out the fact that it is fucking shit. But also, they could have not done that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, wow, the bar for possibility is on the ground and they're somehow only barely stepping over it. You know, it's no matter which way you slice it or dice it, like, it just isn't great.
It's not giving what they think it's giving.
I don't even know what they think it's giving, to be honest. Like, I'm wondering if they're trying to, like, touch on, like, moral ambiguity, but I don't really think it hits the mark. Because this is kind of moral ambiguity this season, if you will. As much as the other seasons have a lot of moral ambiguity, like, the whole Soulless Sam thing has really broadened the discussion, and this feels like an extension of that, of, like, this weird grey space that we've now entered where our protagonists are no longer, and I mean, you could probably argue this from, like, season 4 onwards, really, but, like, our protagonists are no longer truly solely protagonists. They are also implicit in antagonistic behaviour, and so, or at least sort of somehow involved, at least tangentially, in the plot lines of the antagonists, like, even, like, them working differently this season. And so I think that maybe it's to do with that kind of shift in narrative perspective, but I don't know if it's abundantly clear enough that that is the intention, or if it's just, like, kind of a shitty once-off plot. Kind of in line with how last week's episode was sort of a shitty once-off plot.
Shitty once-off plots are not something new to Supernatural.
Do you want to know something else that is not new to Supernatural? The episode, in general, felt like a whole bunch, kind of like last episode where we were talking about, like, oh, season 1 called it, what's its fucking plot back? In this instance, not only is Doctor Who on the phone going, hey, give me my plot back, but also, it's kind of giving Hookman, like,
just a little.
Just a little. In the cold open, when the mannequin first, like, disappears off of its, like, setup, we get the close-up of the silver hook that's, like, swinging in the absence of the mannequin, obviously. And then the shape of the cut that gets drawn across their forehead was really reminding me of the way that the hook was dragged through, like, the wall and stuff in Hookman. Like, it was just so reminiscent of that. And also, the recurrence of blood splatters that make no fucking sense. The blood splatter that shows the janitor has been dead, and then you cut to the janitor and he's stabbed directly through the neck. No fucking way that it's making the blood splatter that appeared on a whiteboard. And then when they go back and rewatch the camera footage, the whiteboard isn't even fucking there. Like, he's not even near a whiteboard. It literally makes zero sense whatsoever. And I'm like, wow, this is truly season 1-esque writing shorthand for, like, oh, the blood splatter means he died, you know? Yeah. But we're not going to think about logically how that would work. Just accept what we give you and don't ask questions. Don't think about it too hard. It's not that deep.
Obviously. Like, that's how Supernatural works, yeah?
We're splashing in the kiddie pool this episode.
I was correct, though. It was a ghost.
You were correct. It was a ghost. Not quite a movie set.
No, alas, not to be this week. Not a movie set.
Mm.
But that's okay. I think I was close enough. I was correct in at least one regard.
We actually have some new supernatural lore. Haunted kidneys.
Which does sound like something we would have pulled directly out of season one.
I'm so sure that you have asked about haunted body parts like organ donation before. I'm so sure we've talked about it because I remember thinking of an episode where it's relevant. Hilariously, not this episode, a different episode we haven't seen yet where organ donation is relevant to
somehow the that's plot. Not reassuring.
But like, I love, there's like haunted kidneys, things that have happened at the CW Supernatural, like obsessed with that take. Whoever's idea that was, I think is really funny. And, like, quite interesting as a story choice.
Yeah.
What I really dislike is that they just kill the person with the kidney.
They don't have to think of a creative solution for this.
Right? I'm like, just say you wrote yourself into a corner. Don't make
it's okay. It happens to everyone.
Don't make one of the only surviving female characters of this episode, don't make it her problem that you wrote yourself into this corner. Surely they could have figured out, like, they could have ghost family therapied their way out of this. Surely they could have found a way to have Rose's ghost be at peace. Like, she had carried out her revenge. All the guys who were implicit in her death, I'm pretty sure, at least the ones that, like, the episode draws attention to, were dead.
I think there's one other dude that was also in the flashback footage.
Oh, okay. But, like, even so, they could have family therapized their way out of it.
Yeah, you know? 100%.
But instead they were like, oh, we'll just kill this other innocent girl.
Because that's how the CW Supernatural works.
Oh, it's just so frustrating. It just feels lazy. It feels like, oh, we wrote ourselves into this corner. We can't have Sam and Dean outright kill her. Mm. So we'll just have her die as the result of an accident.
We'll have her sister kill her. Because her sister's a vengeful ghost.
I tell you what, though. Talking about, like, throwbacks and, you know, old seasons wanting their plot back. If I had a nickel for every time Baby got possessed and tried to kill Dean before ultimately crashing into a house to defeat a ghost, I'd have two nickels, which isn't a lot, but it is weird that it's happened twice. It's literally the plot of the pilot. It is literally the plot of the pilot of Supernatural.
So they were really just like, that was shit, let's try again.
Really Sarah Gamble looking at Kripke Era and going, let's try it, but different this time. Also, the way that Dean yells, this is not a sex doll, about Baby when she's possessed, I do think that the delivery of that line is very fun. And the way that Isabel, like, gets out of the car and sneaks up on the brothers while they're talking about shit, I don't know how the fuck they did not know she was standing right there. It's like she rolled a d20 on stealth and, like, got a natural 20. You know, plus 8 or something stupid, because she literally just gets out of the car, fully walks up, is standing maybe a foot from them, and it's not until she starts speaking that they even glance in her direction. It's ridiculous.
Ghosts just be like that.
She's not a ghost, she's a real human woman.
She might as well be a ghost. She was
still alive at that point.
She might as well be a ghost. She dies by the end.
She might as well be dead the way the narrative ignores her.
Yeah, basically. They are always out here making decisions, and it just amazes me. Some of the decisions they make. We understand that it is a television show and it does in fact rely on them making decisions. But I'm also just curious as to why the decision always seems to be, let's just kill a girl.
I think part of it is like an unfortunate trope in the horror genre. I think another part of it is the unfortunate media lens of 2011. And I also think part of it is just like sexism, really, like misogyny. I think like really what it all boils down to. I do want to get your opinion though. I mean, there are kind of, like, two sides to this episode. I think there's a side of the episode that's obviously focused on, like, Sam and what he's up to and how he's conducting himself now that he has a soul back, in, like, contrast to how we've seen him in flashbacks about the year that Dean was away. And we also have, obviously, the Dean side of the episode where Dean goes back and talks to Lisa because Ben has called him and has been, like, code red, like, mom's...
out on a date with a different dude.
Well, I mean, what he says is not that. What the truth is that, yeah. And so, I guess I'm interested. Do we want to wrap up on Sam and then talk about Dean? Or do you want to talk about Dean for a bit and then jump back? I'm curious about the other side of the episode.
You immediately going towards Dean is
on brand.
On brand for your nature.
Yeah, look, I've never tried to hide it. I'm a Dean girly.
It's a bit late to change.
Yeah, love Sam, don't get me wrong. But at my heart, at my core.
At your core, you're a Dean girly.
I'm a Dean girly.
I continue to be bored as shit with the Lisa plotline. I'm really sorry. Like, I get what they're trying to do with it. And, like, they're trying to highlight, you know, how difficult it is to be a hunter and also have a family and blah, blah, blah. Like, I get that. I see what they're trying to do. Unfortunately, I find it boring as fucking shit. And there's no getting around that fact. It is what it is. Am I being a little bit harsh? Probably. But I am really just not inspired by the whole Lisa-Dean plotline. I like Lisa. I think Lisa is one of the better characters of Supernatural, but, like, unfortunately, I think she's getting the short end of the stick with the fucking plotline.
I actually really like the scenes with Ben and Lisa and Dean. I think they're really important for the narrative as it's being told. I also think it's really important for Dean as a character. And I think it's also really important for Ben and Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Because so often in Supernatural, we deal with absent fathers. So often. And we sort of deal with the ramifications of absent fathers, but we don't see the fathers actually performing the absent behavior, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because it's often like John or it's Samuel, like, you know, or God, you know. I think that this plot was important because the last time that we really had Lisa and Ben, it was Lisa basically saying this isn't going to work, and then that was just the end of the phone call. And I think if they had just left it there and hadn't done something to sort of add a bit of finality to the relationships that Dean not only had with Lisa, but with Ben, I think it would have felt unfinished. And I'm glad that they addressed it. And I think that actually the conversation that Dean has with Ben is as if not more important than the conversation he has with Lisa. Yeah. Because Lisa knew why it wasn't going to work. Lisa... Yeah. has the adult perspective, and she was one half of that relationship between her and Dean. Ben was doing the classic kid thing of thinking, we've done something wrong. I'm the problem, it's me. And so I think it was really important for Dean to tell him, it's not you. I love you. I would stay for you, but it's just not gonna work. And I actually really love the moment where Dean says, essentially, like, just because you love someone doesn't mean you should stick around and screw up their life, which is just, like, Dean thesis of all fucking time, right? And then he goes on to say, if I stayed, you'd end up just like me, which I think is really interesting because it's also...
Dean thesis of all time.
Dean thesis of all time. It's also Mary's number one fear was that, like, her children would grow up the way that she did. And so, like, for Dean to carry that fear through and be like, my number one fear is that you would grow up to be like me.
Also, the irrational Dean fear of turning out like his father. Despite the fact he's shown none of the warning signs that his father very clearly showed.
Yeah, and while we're on the, like, the Dean and his parents, like, track, I actually want to mention, I was listening to Raising Petition, and I was listening to their episode on 413, when Dean first goes back in time and meets Mary. Was it 413 or 403? Whichever one, where he first meets Mary. And I can't remember if it was Beth or Hannah, who made a really, really interesting point when Mary is talking to John and, you know, when I think it's when they're in the diner, and Dean is spying on them. And she says to John, I love you for exactly what you are.
Yeah.
Not who you are, but what specifically. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because John was her white picket fence. And that
John was Lisa.
John was Lisa. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, when I heard them make that, like, connection, that specific differentiation, I was like, oh, my God, because I was, you know, watching season 6 with you. And I was like, holy shit. John is literally the Lisa equivalent. He was Mary's way up. He was what Mary idolized as the ideal lifestyle, even though it wasn't the life she was leading. It was the life she wanted, right? It wasn't necessarily John that she wanted. It was what he represented. And we've been talking about Dean and Lisa in that regard since the beginning. But Dean goes on to say, trust me, I'm not someone you want to aim to be. And that's really interesting because that's going to come back later in the form of a line where he says, I ain't much of a role model. And I'm drawing attention to that because it's a conversation that he has with Cass, and Cass basically says to him, sure you are. Don't talk down about yourself. Like, you don't give yourself enough credit kind of thing. And the reason why I think that is really important is because of what Lisa says. And she basically says something to the effect of, I know what I want, and I know I can't have it. Which is so Cass-coded because of the line that we get later, which you know about the confession, sorry, not a spoiler, but... a really significant line from the confession is, the one thing I want is something I know I can't have. It is so similar in the text. It's mind-blowing to me. Like, going back and rewatching this with the context of the future stuff is fascinating. And also, like, Lisa saying that, you know, she called Dean all the time, and Dean saying, well, I nearly called you back 100 times. number one, not like the same thing. Like, you can't say that and be like, think it's a valid fucking argument. Like, that's bullshit.
Well, thinking about calling someone and actually calling someone are the same thing. Yeah. That's at least what my anxiety tells me.
Literally. I was like, okay, but like, Dean, you probably should have
responded,
you know, at some point. But then Lisa says, I'm not asking for anything. And Dean goes, well, then ask for something.
Yeah.
Right.
And Dean's like, so used to having everyone demanding
things of him. The way that he feels like valuable is what he does. And that is also like another thing that like in terms of like Dean and Cass will become like really relevant. Just the communication aspect. I think it's really interesting to look at Dean's romantic relationships and like this through line of miscommunicating and like what he needs in a relationship, in both in terms of like what he wants of the other person, but also in terms of what he wants to be able to do for them,
mm-hmm.
and like how he views himself. And how this ultimately is detrimental to all of his romantic relationships, whether that be with Cassie or with Lisa or with Cass or anyone else. I think that, like, ultimately he's always coming back to these sort of internal self opinions that fundamentally, like, people around him know to be wrong. And again, like, we have this called out in the text. Again, like, the confession, there's a whole bit about it in there. We'll get there when we get there. The other thing, I know that I'm kind of, like,
That's okay.
But like, this is just like, for me, like, this part of the episode is like so interesting for so many reasons. And I just know Dean's that you don't.
Dean's your and Dean's I don't give a shit. No.
And I know you don't really care, so I'm just going to monologue through it and then we can move on to something that you have an opinion on. We also get from Lisa, she says she keeps showing up. Every time I think you're gone, you show up again, which again, like, a Destiel thing, like, we'll keep going as we go down the track.
Not to derail this too much, but no, she also has the line about how every time he calls, she's worried that it's actually Sam to say he's dead. We just know this is patently untrue. Winchesters cannot physically die. They have, in fact, tried before. It's never taken.
You're so right.
So, really, if Sam was to ring Lisa and be like, hey, Dean's dead, what he really means is Dean's dead until some weirdly powerful eldritch being who is, in fact, obsessed with Dean brings him back. So, you won't see him for the next maybe 2 to 4 months.
Also, canonically, if Dean died, Sam wouldn't tell anyone. He'd keep that tidbit to himself. Which I hate that I can say. But yeah, if Dean died, Lisa would just never know.
Yeah.
Like, Sam would not tell her. He would not think to call.
No. Dean would be dead. And this
is not a slight on Sam. No. It's just true.
Dean would be dead. Lisa wouldn't hear from Dean in, like, 8 months, and then he'd just randomly show up at her doorstep again.
Yeah.
Because
With more trauma,
because he had, in fact, been pulled from fucking hell or heaven again. We've already established at this point, Winchesters cannot fucking die. Who even knows how many times Dean has died at this point?
It's actually unknown, because Nash says in Dark Side of the Moon, like, you've been dead so many times.
And I'm pretty sure the angels in their episode also say, we've already mind-wiped you, like, a dozen times and fucking sent you back. They're like, oh, wow, you're in heaven. Guess we just got to mind wipe and shove you back down to earth again.
It's like a stamp card and, like, on their 10th visit to heaven, they get, like, a little free something, like a little goodie bag.
Free-ass coffee. Like, these dudes cannot stay dead. And whether that is because
it's like they're allergic.
Whether that's because their brother has bad taste in deals or because some eldritch horror is, like, low-key obsessed with you. TV. They're not staying dead.
No. But Lisa doesn't necessarily know that.
No.
Lisa's never met Cass.
I think it would be
or
so Crowley, funny.
Or death.
I think it would be so funny for Cass and Lisa to meet, though.
I think that would be maybe the best interaction of all time. There are a few characters in Supernatural who never meet, and it feels insane that that is the case. Definitely Lisa and Cass would be on my list of characters who I'm like, yeah, you guys should have hung out.
Like, they just got a bitch about Dean a little bit. And then, like, Lisa would get it.
Lisa would get it.
Like, she'd get why Dean's not really that into her. Like, she'd get it. She'd be like, oh, this is why.
The money I would pay to have had a scene in, like, late seasons where they run into Lisa for some fucking reason. And she's just like, oh, is he still like that? And Cass is like, yes. And Sam is just like, side-eye. Would kill for it. But yeah, so that whole scene, there are a couple other bits that I love, but I'm not going to waffle on about too much. Like, we have sort of Dad Dean is, like, in the building, honestly, mm-hmm. from the moment he opens the door too. And Ben says, you know, whatever I did, I'm sorry. And Dean makes the point of saying, you didn't do anything. Like, I need you to understand that. It's not your fault, you know?
It's not you, it's me.
But Ben hits Dean with, like, a fucking gut punch, which is, you know, you're walking out on your family, right? Like, you recognize that that's what you're doing. And I'm like, I understand.
From Ben's perspective, he's walking out, but it's not walking out if you're asked to leave.
Yeah.
And Lisa has set a very clear boundary.
Yeah.
And I think actually this is some of the more emotionally mature Dean we've seen.
Yes,
I agree. In that he is respecting that boundary.
And I think that the fact that he took the call from Lisa, like, I think personally he probably should have answered on the first ring. Like,
yeah.
She was the one who said, hey, this isn't going to work. If she's reaching out, there could be a reason. And I actually think it's slightly surprising that he doesn't immediately answer, as because you'd think that he would be worried that something had gone wrong and they had been, like,
because even though he's not around them now, doesn't mean that they won't be targeted.
There's still importance in him. There's still a weakness, essentially, for, like, enemies to exploit.
But this ties into Supernatural's key thing of, we're weaker when we're together. Nothing bad can happen to the other person if they're not in my direct line of sight.
It's such flawed logic. But, no, and I do think that the fact that, you know, he shows up and he immediately understands, like, he says, like, we've been parent-trapped. Like, he gets it.
Yeah.
And I know that there's, like, the little snarky comment where he says, like, ooh, Dr. Matt, you know, how respectable or whatever. But
we should remember that Dean is, in fact, a respected man about town.
Well, he's also canonically into doctors. So, like, I think that the conversation that he and Lisa have, especially, like, their joint, like, go to your room when Ben comes down, I think that it's actually, like, as much as you said, like, you find the Dean and Lisa plotline kind of, like, you're over it, I get it.
Yeah.
That's valid. A lot of the early season 6 plot lines, I think that was most people's kind of, like, opinion. I think that's probably why so many of them get disregarded pretty much by the midway point. But I do think it's important for them to address it, because it is a loose end, essentially.
I like that they're addressing it. I'm just really bored by how they're addressing it.
See, I actually think that it's quite nice. I think that it's mature, which is unlike Supernatural. You know, I think that it's a really interesting, like, they are both behaving like adults.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so rare that we see Sam or Dean behaving in an emotionally rational, grounded way. But I actually think that the way that Dean handles, specifically the conversation with Ben, I think is very well done for him as a character. And I feel like it also doesn't feel out of character that he handled it well. You know what I mean? Like, I just think that the writing surrounding that was important, and I think that it was well executed.
Dean is nothing if not a good dad.
Yeah, even if you think that it's boring or it's, like, presented in a way where it's like, whatever.
I'm just kind of over it. And, like, to be fair, I've been over this plotline since season 5.
And to be, like, fair, neither of us have ever been a fan of Dean and Lisa because of the reasons that we have been well documented on.
Like, and I want to make that clear. Like, I don't think they're necessarily handling badly. I'm really bored. Like, they've established that Dean and Lisa aren't going to work. Is there a reason why they have to bring it up again every, like, 2 to 3 episodes? It feels like they're harping on it at this point, and I'm just like, I'm a little over it.
You're a very quick-paced plot girly.
Yeah.
See, for me, I feel like this is the bare minimum they needed to do, because I'm a slow burn girly, and I need that emotional arc to be completed in a way that feels like it's actually been given the space it needs to breathe.
Whereas I felt like the arc was already complete.
I do want to reiterate, though, Team Lisa all the way.
Oh, yeah, Lisa is 100% too good for Dean. I think her and Sarah would be great friends.
Actually, Sarah from Providence?
Yeah.
Yes, you are correct.
I know.
I hope those two find each other somehow. Yeah. And, like,
some sort of support group or something, you know? Despite the fact that Lisa did not make it into anybody's top 5 female characters at the end of season 5, Lisa is one of the best characters on the show. Unfortunately, I feel like her plotline has been handled like shit.
I think that she is let down by the fact that she is exclusively Dean's love interest. Like, what do we even know about
Lisa? Yeah, what do we know about Lisa despite the fact that...
We know that she has a child named Ben.
Yeah.
We know that she, at some point at least, was a yoga instructor, whether she still is, who fucking knows. And we know that she's dating Dean. That's it. That is it. We know that she's a mother, a wife, insert, essentially, and that she is a yoga instructor.
We know a fourth thing about her.
Do we?
Mm-hmm. She's too good for Dean.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She is the basis of such a good character. Like, her dialogue is great. I think the actress is great. But she just isn't fleshed out. She isn't given anything.
That's one of the reasons why I'm so sick of this fucking plotline. Because it just feels like we've gotten so much Dean and Lisa and Ben, and it's all been about Dean. Like, none of this feels like it's actually about Lisa.
And I think that's maybe because it's not. It's literally because, like, it's the illusion. Like, yeah. Lisa is the illusion of what he wants. Anyway, we've talked this to death. I think we need to move on. But my point is that I thought the conversations he had with Lisa and Ben were really important. I think they were really well written and well done. I think the execution is great. And I am glad that they had those explicit discussions about boundaries and about where they are at. And I'm glad that they gave Dean the opportunity to have a sit-down conversation with Ben and acknowledge that, like, the breakdown of this relationship doesn't just affect Dean and Lisa. It also heavily affects Ben.
All right, lovely. What do you think my PSA of the day is?
I actually have a guess.
Oh, my God.
You have a guess? I know. I have a pre-prepared one. It's actually my first note. My PSA guess is that if you haven't done one or you haven't done one in a while and you're able to, you should do a CPR course. Because tapping someone lightly on the face and saying their name over and over and over and over when they're not responsive and potentially have no pulse and aren't breathing, I mean, it's not the only thing you could be doing. Like, the fact that these boys can stitch up a bullet wound with a sewing needle, some fucking dental floss, and a quart of whiskey. But CPR's not manly. But couldn't do CPR.
No, no.
But no, like, the way that Dean is just, like, kind of lightly tapping at Sam's face is giving, like, you're asleep and your cat wants food. You know? Like...
It's giving wake up, Jeff.
Literally. Oh, that's so funny. I'm so sad that so many people will not understand that. Anyway, what I think is... I'm going to take that whole section of conversation and I'm going to put it at the end of this episode. So if you're interested in knowing what Jamie and I just got tangentially involved in talking in depth about the Wiggles for probably the last 15 minutes, just hang around
for the end
credits.
It's not relevant to Supernatural.
No, I'm going to remove it from here. Anyway, back to Supernatural. Do you have a point you'd like to segue into? I don't remember how we got onto the Wiggles. Like, I don't know how we got here.
I want to say it's certainly an interesting choice to have the dude have a, like, sex mannequin at home. Like,
yeah, that's a wild choice that, like, they really could have done anything.
Yeah.
And they did that. Like, he could have just been killed as he was leaving the factory. Yeah. Like, he didn't have to make it home. Oh, I have a really interesting point on this, though. So, it's been a little hot minute since I've talked about Biometta. But I'm going to bring it up again. Why are you laughing at me?
No, that's okay. You finish your point. I'll tell you why I'm laughing in a minute.
Okay, well, you're not allowed to forget why you're laughing.
I can't. I won't forget why I'm laughing.
Okay, because sometimes you're like, I'll tell you, and then we forget.
Okay.
But be a meta this episode.
Yeah.
It's been a hot minute, but I wanted to bring it back. So when, I think his name is Johnny, the guy with the long hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
When he is about to die, you see him, like, walking into the pub, and you see Isabel and her friends, like, going in there, and that's how we know later that she's at the bar and she's connected. So he obviously, like, lives above or, like, in the general vicinity. When you see the bar window, it has two different beers advertised in neon on the bar window. Mm-hmm. One is El Sol, which we've talked about before, and it's about being misleaded, right? Yeah. It's about someone is being lied to, whether it's the audience or a character. Yeah. And, like, we as the audience have been lied to because we think the situation is done. We think that the remains have been burned and there is nothing left of the story. The guy is safe, whatever. We don't know why we're showing the bar. So we're seeing El Sol, and we're being deceived. The audience is being deceived. Yep. Sam's being deceived. Dean's being deceived by this, you know, situation.
Dean's been lied to by Ben.
Yeah, actually, that's show up in the first
place. Sam has not been lied to, but Sam is under a false impression that
the case is over, that all the remains are buried. Yeah, exactly. So that's really interesting in and of itself. And then on the other side of the window, there was another name in neon, which was Schultz, and I didn't immediately recognize it, but I was like, that's got to mean something. So I actually looked it up, and I found a post by, the URL is fuck, but it's been censored, so it's F-CK, yeah, football, spelled F-U-T-B-O-L. So thank you very much for writing this, but they have made a post at some point talking about the context of the Schultz brand when it comes to beer meta. And they have suggested that this particular beer is actually associated with imminent death, which I think is really interesting. And there's a couple of examples that they've used here, but I can't tell you all of them just because of spoiler stuff. It's stuff in later seasons. If anyone's interested, feel free to, like, obviously go back and find the full post. Yeah. The first instance that they have noted of it is actually in the end when Dean cracks the beer before he shoots the guy who's infected with Crow. So it's literally the last action he does with the guy before he gets shot. It's also in Dark Side of the Moon, the beer cans that are shown around the beds when Sam and Dean are about to get shot and they die.
And again, can't stay dead for the fucking life of them.
Yeah, literally. In The Point of No Return, Dean has, like, chosen he's going to say yes to Michael. He finds the holy man. And the guy kneels down the street to pray, and behind him is the Schultz beer.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, interestingly, off in the corner is El Sol as well, so, mm-hmm. like, deception again. And then most recently, in 2 minutes to midnight, when Dean is talking to Bobby and saying that he's had his meeting with Death, and he asks Bobby what he thinks Death will do to people who lie to his face, they are drinking Schultz beer in that, mm-hmm. scene. So I think that it is super interesting. It's actually kind of like the bullet, mm-hmm. in, like, character in Hamilton. Like, it's kind of foreshadowing an imminent death of a character in an episode. And so I was like, damn, it's been a hot minute. But it was a very prominent,
yeah.
example, so I wanted to point it out. It's also one that we can keep an eye out for now moving forward.
Okay, so anyway, my PSA this week.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry. No wonder you said that you weren't going to forget it. Jesus. I'm so sorry. PSA this week is that Bethany needs to fucking pay attention.
So my PSA this week is maybe consider what you're classifying as a quote-unquote joke. Is it a joke or is it just cruelty to other people?
I'd agree.
If the person who's not laughing has less power than you in the situation, not a joke.
Yeah. It's punching up versus punching down.
Yeah.
And this is a classic example of punching down,
mm-hmm.
and it's so fucked up. The situation that they depict in this episode is just, I literally don't have words. Like, it's so, mm-hmm. fucking gross and horrible and upsetting, mm-hmm. and just shit. And, like, the way that Johnny, like, excuses it, like, oh, you know how guys are when they get together, is so fucking reminiscent, mm-hmm. of, like, locker room talk. And it's like, get fucked. You don't have to be an asshole.
Being a man, being around other men is not an excuse to be an asshole.
Yeah, literally. Like, genuinely, it's so frustrating because it's like, you are still capable of fucking thought and empathy, surely. Like, you should.
They are, in fact, in possession of their souls.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you should be able to recognize the difference between a joke that is genuinely funny and bullying. And it, mm-hmm. feels schoolyard. Like, mm-hmm. it feels like this is children who, yeah. haven't actually learned morals properly yet and the concept of empathy for others and being in others' shoes. But I do like Sam's anger because I think Sam has the, like, normal fucking response of, like, wow, you suck.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else you wanted to touch on? I've got a few things.
This episode, I think I liked it slightly more than I liked last week's episode.
This episode was less egregious because not everything was bad.
No. The sound design was also whack this week.
Yeah. What did you say while we were watching it? Something about gonging, returning or something. I don't know. Yeah. But it was weird.
It was weird.
We also had a lot more flashbacks again this episode. Yeah. And, like, I think it's a bit much. Like, the audience saw it happen. It's not like last week where, like, we said the flashbacks were a bit much and it was just because, like, of the way they were presented.
It was a storytelling device last week. Which this is, week, like, it's sure. just weird.
This week is like, yeah, the audience saw the same thing Sam saw. Like, you don't have to re-show us. Like, it wasn't that long ago. Also, the fucking montage of Dean just being sad about Ben and Lisa. Like, I don't know how to feel about that. Yeah. Like, I get it. Like, it's showing that, like, it's what he's thinking about, mm-hmm. as he drives away. And, like, I kind of get it. But
I also think I'd be less sick of the Dean Lisa storyline if they stopped doing shit like this. You know what I mean? It just feels very heavy-handed.
I think the only reason that I was kind of like about it is just because, like, in these last two episodes specifically, we have had so much flashback and montage. I'm like, yeah, we get it. These boys have done some shit. They've been through it. We get it.
And I'm famously not a fan of the flashback.
A couple of things that I did like this episode that are just, like, funny little bits that I'm not going to spend, like, you know, I'm not going to monologue about. Is, number one, again, another instance of Sam Winchester being the king of understatements, with him being like, it wasn't fun, in reference to
his time in hell.
His time in hell. Hilarious. Love that for him. I also wanted to note, like, they mentioned again, like, obviously the difference of time passing in hell, like Sam said, all felt like weeks, but for Dean it was like 2 or 3 minutes. Dean being rewarded by the narrative again, which is like, we had the example of Dean saying, we did it.
He just keeps on winning, doesn't he?
He is never wrong. Like, he is so rarely wrong. It's really interesting. But yeah, he says, we did it your way and every bad thing I said would happen happened. And I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. He also had a line which was, be my Valentine, and he passed Sam the fake heart, which is literally the second time they've done this. They also did it in My Bloody Valentine. And I think Hannah and Beth pointed out that it's actually a callback to the movie that Jensen was in, mm-hmm. My Bloody Valentine. The way that Jensen chooses to interact with the dummy after Sam suggests that it could be the dummy that is, like, doing the crimes is literally so funny, and I just very much enjoyed it. I thought it was a very fun performance. Sam telling Johnny that he's lucky that he is the most suspicious interview of all time. He's so real for that.
Yeah, he's not subtle.
No.
And that turned into not necessarily a good thing for him because he still died, but like,
yeah,
it was almost a very good thing for him.
It's also, I think this episode's one of those situations where I'm like, I know that this guy is like in imminent danger or whatever, but I find it hard to care.
Though, to be fair, I felt like they did a decent enough job of making him feel like a little bit less guilty than the original people who died.
Yeah, because he was just sort of there. Well, he was heavily involved in the like actual bullying and whatever, but he did immediately have the option of like, or the thought of, oh, I'm going to call 911 and I'm going to like whatever. Like, he had to be talked into the whole burying the body thing.
He wasn't the one who like tried to grab her or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like,
so like he wasn't a good person, but he wasn't the worst person in the room. Which is, like, not a great standard, but, like, you know,
but, whatever. Like, you know, his character just kind of reminded me, like, a little bit of, you know, not necessarily me, but, like, sometimes I just have, like, a hard time reading situations.
Mm.
And so I can understand, like, if you're in that situation and people that you consider friends are like, oh, this is really funny, like, just kind of feeling like you have to go along with it because, like,
it's the social pressure.
Yeah, right? If your friends think it's funny and your friends are going along with it,
you're like, oh, I trust their judgment, I guess, because, like, they're my friends, but, like, also I don't feel that great about this situation. Yeah. Yeah. No,
which is kind of what it was giving to me, at least.
My last couple of things are other Sam moments. Number one, I straight up thought he was going to take a photo of that burning corpse when he pulled out the phone, and, like, the way he's holding it, I was like, are you just going to text a photo to fucking Johnny to be like, you're good? I was like, what are you doing?
What was really weird to me, though, is the corpse looks like a skeleton. Like, how long's it been in the ground?
They really sped up that decomp. Like,
I feel like the decomp,
it's been a year.
I feel like it shouldn't just be a skeleton by this
point. Yeah, them worms were hungry.
Mm-hmm.
I think is like, what we're
like. To be fair, it wasn't in a coffin, so that will speed up the decomp. But, like, also, but it wasn't even slightly gooey. Like, give me some ooh, give me some goo, you know?
But yeah, no, I straight up thought Sam was, like, taking a pic for the Insta, you know? Like,
new burial site, who's this?
My last note is that Sam at the end of the episode says, at least Satan's left the building, and Dean comes back with, yeah, it's the little things. And that interaction is so funny to me. It is like the epitome of Sam understatement king. I just think it's fun, and I like that Dean's reaction is like, yeah, okay, but sure, that's one way to put it.
Like, you could look at it that way, but why would you?
Yeah. And it's also like, let's remember, Sam started the episode essentially unconscious because of his hell visions. Like, it's not like, oh, it's been 6 months and there's not been anything bad that's happened. It's been 48 hours and he has already been unconscious, and he, in his own words, experienced a week of hell trauma.
It's almost like Cass was right.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, they probably would have been fine with Soulless Sam if Soulless Sam didn't try to murder Bobby.
The problem, like, with Soulless Sam is that he literally had no bounds.
Yeah, like, I feel like when most people are soulless, like, rationally, they still understand that there are some things that you should not do.
Yeah, it's like, you should still have a concept of morals, even if you don't feel, like, guilt and stuff, like, as a motivator to enact certain, like, choices, you know?
But Soulless Sam was really out here just being,
he's something, all right.
Yeah.
Talk about this a lot later as well.
I do think one thing that I'd wished with Soulless Sam is that they'd given us, like, a little bit more of, like, Soulless Sam before it was revealed that it was Soulless Sam.
To be fair, they gave us sort of 10 episodes.
Yeah. But I just kind of wish that, like, he'd been a little bit more off. And I understand kind of why they couldn't do that, because if he had been any more off around Dean would have picked it up a lot quicker.
Yeah, he was already super sus.
But I just feel like it did kneecap the entire concept and, like, the desperation Dean felt to get Sam's soul back in there by not showing him doing any atrocities before. And now we're getting flashbacks to the atrocities. But I just kind of wish that we just had, like, one episode where it was Sam from Sam's POV and Dean wasn't there. And so we could actually see how bad it was.
Like, we have an episode where, like, Dean is visiting Ben and Lisa.
Yeah.
And, like, we just don't see them except for maybe checking in over the phone. And, like, we just have an episode where Sam's on a case by himself.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
Or, like, a case where Dean's sort of in and out, but it's framed from Sam's perspective.
Oh, kind of like Weekend at Bobby's.
Yeah, so you see Sam acting like he's acting with no soul.
Mm.
And then Dean comes into the picture and he's different.
Oh.
And then Dean leaves and he's Soulless Sam again.
So the audience
oh, that's like, you know.
Yeah, the audience is like, oh, okay, Sam's really weird right now. Like, it's not just like, oh, he's acting kind of weird. Well, this comes back to, like, us talking about how most of this season specifically, I would argue not so much the last couple of episodes, but definitely very strongly the first few, is it's like, this is Dean's POV.
Yeah.
Like, exclusively. Like, we are, as the audience, learning things at the same pace as Dean, from the same perspective as Dean.
Mm. And I think it just, it does kneecap a little bit the urgency for Sam to get his soul back by not showing us just how bad it is.
I think that the urgency is definitely there, but I think that the urgency does ramp up very quickly. Like, it kind of goes, like, Sam is, like, functioning relatively okay, like, passably normal.
Yeah.
And then, like, you find out he doesn't have a soul, and then two episodes later, he's trying to kill Bobby.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that feels like an immediate uptake. And, like, yes, he is, to be fair, he is being driven by the fear of his soul being put back in. So, like, I do understand that. But I think it would have definitely been interesting to have an episode kind of like you just described sit somewhere in the middle there.
Just so you could see, like, oh, there is an actual, like, legitimate reason and not just Sam's acting kind of weird and Dean's suspicious. Like, just to have that sort of perspective of, oh, no, like, he is actually genuinely not good without his soul. Because it goes from he's just kind of weird without his soul to, oh, no, he's physically trying to murder Bobby to we've got to...
He's back with his soul. I think that it's almost like when they did the Demon Blood review and how the audience finds out a couple episodes before Dean.
Yeah.
So, like, the audience is like, oh, okay, we know. Yeah. We know. I think that that sort of timing maybe would have helped with, like, this point. Anywho, did you have any other thoughts, feelings, or opinions?
I don't think there's actually really a lot to talk about this episode. Like,
not if you don't care about the Dean Lisa stuff.
I don't. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. That's valid.
I don't.
You're like, allowed to have that opinion. I don't agree with you, but that's okay. Mm. Like, media is subjective and all that hoopla. But in that instance, how would you rate episode 14 of season 6 of Supernatural, Mannequin 3, The Reckoning, out of 5?
I think I'm going to give it, like, maybe a 3 out of 5. I just found a lot of the Dean Lisa stuff kind of boring. Like, they're just rehashing the same stuff, and I just didn't think it really gave us any new perspective. I also think they're not doing Lisa any sort of justice in the spotlight. And then, like, the other side of the coin is, like, I think it's great that they did have, like, Sam touch on how their job is fucking shit sometimes. Mm-hmm. And, like, because they take, like, a non-discriminatory, we save everyone approach.
Yeah, we've talked before about, even, like, way back in, like, the first few episodes of season one about how, like, the monster is sometimes just the victim.
Yeah.
And that's still, that is this episode.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of giving me Yellow Fever.
Yeah.
That first episode of Darbs, where it was like the ghost that they ended up killing in this horribly traumatic way was like, literally he did nothing wrong. He was unjustly murdered in horrific circumstances, and yet somehow he was the villain of the episode. It's kind of giving that same energy, even down to the fact that they both worked in a factory and they both thought they had like this.
It's a metaphor for the crushing soul of capitalism.
Sure. Okay. Next week's episode is titled The French Mistake. Okay. I know, for full, you know.
This is one of the things that I knew going in. So I hadn't watched a full episode of Supernatural going into this. I'm pretty sure I've seen at least part of the next episode. Because I'm pretty sure when I was living with a previous roommate, they were watching Supernatural. And I happened to walk into the lounge room at the same time as they were watching. I am like 99% sure that the next episode is the one where Dean and Sam get like zapped into our universe as Jensen and Jared, and they're trying to work out how the fuck to get back to their universe. And they're like trying to pretend to be actors and that sort of stuff. It's very meta, very, very much like, oh, here's some like fun little like tee hee hee, we're giving kind of a peek behind the scenes, but it's all part of the
show. Tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
It's very like fourth wall. Like, I'm like, I'm not gonna lie to you. That's exactly the episode. Like, you already know. I have been dying for us to get to this episode. I was explaining to you earlier today before we started.
This was like same vibes as like Changing Channels. Like,
So it's like a similar like a comedy concept.
Oh, does that mean that Gabriel returns? Like,
well, I'm not going to spoil the bits you don't know. So I'm just going to, you know.
I feel like if there's an episode for Gabriel to return, this would make sense. Like, what? This is his MO.
What I
was Zaki Boy back?
You're just going to have to wait and see. You already know too much.
Which one of my dead faves are they?
Here's the thing. I have been dying for Jamie to get to specifically two episodes this season. First episode that I have been dying to get to is this next one is The French Mistake. And anyone who's been listening to us for a while and knows a lot of our like ongoing, you know, jokes and whatever will hopefully understand why I have been dying to get to this episode, because There is such a funny, like, psychic prediction roundabout bullshit thing. There's actually two of them that come out in this episode. And when we first started making, like, you know, those comments or whatever, and I really hope Jamie has no idea what I'm talking about, but when we
the
first
only started, thing that I'm thinking it might be is, like, the Sarah Gamble long con.
Well, you'll have to wait and see.
Just simply because that is something that is very inherently lied to, like, the production. Mm. And if next week's episode is exactly what I think it is, it's the sort of thing where you get, like, a little insight into the production.
Yeah, that's valid. So the thing is, when we first made the jokes that are going to be referenced, I fully forgot about what happens in this episode in regards to the jokes we made. And so when I rewatched this season before we started recording it, I got to these moments, and the way I nearly cried laughing, because I could not believe how on the nose it was. And the fact that I forgot it happens, even fucking funnier. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, maybe if you get a chance, rewatch the episode between now and the next one coming out, and really think about our ongoing kind of jokes. And I want to know if you spot the ones that literally nearly killed me, had me on the floor laughing, crying. Because I cannot wait for Jamie to see them. Anyway, I think that just about does us for today's episode. Do you think that Cass will be in next week?
I think he will. I don't think he'll be Cass. I think he'll be Misha.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that Misha Collins' face is going to be on my screen.
On your screen. Is that exciting for you?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. I'm glad you've got something that you can look forward to in your hopes and dreams. And that just about does us for today's episode. Hopefully you had just as much fun listening as we had recording. Stay tuned for an extra special segment on the Wiggles that no one asked for. If you wanted to get in touch with us in any way, shape or form other than listening to us waffle out in your ears for an hour or so every week, you can always find us on any of our social medias. All of the links will be in the description. And if you wanted some ideas for topics to communicate with us about, some examples could include...
Would you keep a mannequin in your home?
Well, you do.
I do.
I'm sitting next to it. Yeah. It doesn't have a head or arms. No.
It makes it less creepy if it doesn't have head, arms, legs.
Yeah.
If it's just like a disembodied torso, it's fine.
It's a disembodied torso that is dressed like Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn.
Mm.
So that's a vibe.
It's shiny.
If you've ever wondered what it looks like in the room we record in, there's a good insight for you.
Yeah, costumes everywhere.
Yes, it's a delight.
That's
actually
the vibe.
Other topics, I don't know. What are your opinions on the whole Dean, Lisa, Ben situation? Are you on Team Jamie where you're kind of like, eh, it's done, I'm over it? Are you on Team Me where you're like, I feel like it was good that they rounded that out, you know? I'd be keen to know.
I do feel a little bit like a kid in the car though, like, are we done yet? Like, are we there yet? Are we over this fucking boring bullshit?
I think that's honestly, like, just the plot of the podcast. You in the back of the car going, are we there yet? Waiting to dump all over 15, 20 while I drive. And I'm like, we're just as close as we were the last time you asked.
It's like
which is not very. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. And hopefully we have you back next week.
Enjoy some Wiggles.
Bye.
I was watching a podcast the other day, and have you ever heard of Defunct Lab?
No. Oh, yes, I have heard of them.
So they make documentaries, and so their like most recent one was about the Wiggles Ride Dream Lab.
Yeah.
And so he was doing this podcast with Adam Conover, and so the guy who runs Defunct Lab, Kevin, was just like, oh, yeah, you know the Wiggles. And he's like, what the fuck are the Wiggles? And
oh, I saw this on TikTok.
He was just trying to explain to this dude what the fuck the Wiggles were.
Yeah, because it's...
it sounds wild.
It's so funny. It's like that stereotype of like, oh, Australia, the national Australian pastime is lying to foreigners. And like, it is. But it's like, we tell people things that are true and they don't believe us, which is makes it even funnier when we tell things that aren't true and they do.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, how would you know? It's a 50-50.
What gets me though about that entire conversation is at no point does he say... There are a group of four men who are child entertainers.
Yeah.
Who became really famous all over the world.
The funniest part for me about the Wiggles is that they weren't originally the Wiggles. They were originally a band called the Cockroaches. That's the funniest part for me. I'm like, that's where you started? And you went, yeah, no, this isn't working. Let's rebrand as the Wiggles and pivot into children's entertainment.
Two of the members were doing early childhood development at uni. They have degrees in this.
And now we have hot potato.
And fruit salad.
Yummy, yummy. Yummy. Who was your favourite Wiggle? Do you have one?
Not really. Because I got into the Wiggles again when I was older because, like, I lived with my niece and nephew, yeah. So I was watching a lot of the
Small
Wiggles.
Children.
And, like, low-key, I loved Emma. Like, Emma, like, the female yellow Wiggle, she was, like, lit.
See, I never watched any of the newer Wiggles. I'm, like, OG only. They had a movie.
Otherwise, I did like Jeff.
Jeff is a lot of kids' favorite. Yeah. I think because of this gag where he's always asleep.
Yeah. Got it.
Like, yeah, relatable as an adult, but like as a child, you're like, haha, Jeff, wake up, you know? And it's kind of like that interactive, like Dora the Explorer.
He's the one that you remember because you have to scream, like, wake up, Jeff.
TV, yeah, obviously. Exactly. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, if you ask a child, like, hey, what are the names of the Wiggles? If they know any of them, they'll know Jeff. They might know Murray, Greg, or Anthony, but they'll fucking know Jeff. Do you know what fucking slaps from the Wiggles? This is, I'm so sorry for anyone who came in and listened about Supernatural. Do you know what slaps from the Wiggles? Their fucking Christmas albums are lit. It is all I I don't listen to Mariah Carey, Michael Bublé, whoever the fuck. I listen to The Wiggles, You'll Be Wiggling, spelled Y-U-L-E. That is the best Christmas album that has ever been produced, and I will die on this hill. I listen to it every year while I'm putting up the Christmas tree, and I have since I was a child, and I wouldn't have it any other way. That's the end of that story.
And you'll be wiggling.
And I'll be wiggling this Christmas. No, it's literally so good, and I would highly recommend it. I think that my favorite Wiggles thing, though, I don't know if I had a favorite Wiggle. I don't really remember. But what I do know is that I really liked the movie where there was a mermaid. I remember nothing else about the film. I just remember there was a beach and there was a mermaid involved. I had a VHS tape that we had, like, done the thing where you record it off the TV. And wow, if you're younger than 22, maybe, like, this is going to mean nothing to you. For the demographic of our listeners who are mid-30s and up, this is going to hit so good.
This is lit.
So, do you remember, like, you had a VHS tape and you put it in and you would have to, like, press stop and play or whatever when the ad, between the ad breaks?
The other option is every time you watched it, you had to fast forward the ads.
Literally, there was a point, we had a Barbie movie we'd recorded like this. I think it was, like, maybe Barbie Fairytopia. And there's...
Iconic film.
Yeah. Bibble all the way. But there is a... That should be a Christmas song, actually. I've just decided. So there's a portion of my copy of that movie from when I was a kid where we pressed the button. We accidentally double pressed it. And so we recorded the whole ad section. And then it's just ads from that point because we just pressed the button once. So we have half the movie and then a bunch of ads from like 1999.
That's classic content.
Anyway, point is, there's a movie with the Wiggles. They're on a beach. I think maybe it's about Captain Feathersword's backstory because of the beach.
Okay, I didn't realize you meant Wiggles-specific movie. Oh, I thought you just meant Charming Mermaid movie.
No, it's a Wiggles-specific movie. Oh, okay. They're on a beach. There's a mermaid. Surely Captain Feathersword is relevant. I feel like at some point...
No, because see, I was thinking of the teen classic Aquamarine where the mermaid gets washed up into like the rock pool and then the girls take her shopping and then they have to hide her in the water tower.
Oh, I do remember that movie. That one slaps. Or at least it does in my nostalgic memory. Yeah. Anyway, I think...
So we're having a mermaid movie night after this?
Absolutely.